May it please the court?
Sure.
Article 1, Section 8 of the Missouri Constitution says the following regarding freedom of speech: that no law shall be passed impairing the freedom of speech, no matter by what means communicated, that every person shall be free to say, write, or publish, or otherwise communicate whatever he will on any subject, being responsible for all abuses of that liberty. The open courts provision, Article 1, Section 14, says that the courts of justice shall be open to every person, and certain remedy afforded for every injury to person, property, or character. The Missouri Constitution recognizes people's interests in protecting their character, and it acknowledges that interest when it talks about free speech. And the precedent cited in the briefs, such as Milkovich, says the same thing, that the First Amendment is not a pass for abusing the privilege of free speech, that there is an accommodation between the interest of privacy, the interest of reputation, and those of the free press. And in this case, the Court of Appeals applied well-established principles in finding that Mrs. Smith stated cause of action in defamation and false light for statements by the defendants here. And I'd like to focus a little bit on the statements, because the Court of Appeals did not establish liability for opinions, and it did not establish liability under false light for the same statements that are defamatory. So I want to talk a little bit about these statements. The defamatory statements are as follows. The Dirty Dozen is described as being among the worst puppy mills in Missouri, selected based on the number and severity of state and or federal animal welfare violations. There are two provably false components to that statement. The first is the selection criteria, that they were selected based on the number and severity of state and or federal animal welfare violations. She was not. She was selected for political reasons, to make a political point, and not because subjectively or objectively she had more or more severe state or federal animal welfare violations. The second way this is demonstrably false.
Does the federal constitution, fair or unfair, politics is politics, does the federal constitution give more protection than the state constitution to political speech?
I think the accommodation that's been reached in Milkovich and adopted by this court in Missouri applies in both. I point out the Missouri Constitution to show that we're not just talking about it, and it's a very important public policy. Free speech is an important public policy, but I'm trying to show that there's another important public policy there as well, and that's reputation.
I think Judge Tuttleman was asking you is the protection guaranteed by the First Amendment the same as in both constitutions, or do you perceive one of them to provide more or less protection than the other?
I perceive them both to require, in the case of a public figure, actual malice, where the actions brought by a private figure, I think the law is now clear, that person only needs to show fault, which in Missouri has been interpreted as negligence. Now, with respect to false light, we have required actual malice, so there's actually more protection provided for false light claims. But I think that's the standard under either constitution.
And what about political speech versus other speech? Are they reviewed the same way if it's political speech as other speech?
Judge, it's interesting because you wrote this opinion, but we had the Inglesos case where a private person was bringing a claim and the instruction just alleged fault. And you determined that was the appropriate standard, despite the defendant's contention that in that case that there was a public interest. Let's see. I'm going to quote the case for you right here. The trial court submitted Mr. Inglesos' claims against the News Press on a fault rather than an actual malice theory. While defendants do not claim Mr. Iglesias was a public figure, they nonetheless claim that the trial court should have required the jury to find actual malice in order to find for Mr. Iglesias on his actual damage claim, just as is required in the case of a public figure, since the subject of the article was a matter of public concern. We disagree. And then you go on to talk about quotes. And the First Amendment does not require the states to require proof of actual malice to impose liability for defamation involving a private plaintiff, whether or not the issue is one of public concern or interest. So the second thing in that statement about the worst puppy mills in Missouri selected based on the number and severity of state and or federal animal welfare violations, that is demonstrably false, is puppy mills. Because for several reasons, there are cases, as I pointed in my brief, that have found that puppy miller is a defamatory per se term. It's a disparaging term.
And the definition is yes. The definition of it in the bill is not defamatory. It refers to it as large scale puppy breeding operation, right?
Well, talking about the dictionary definition they cite in their brief?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, that's one. I cite some other dictionary definitions that talk about inhumane care and putting the welfare of the dogs second.
And so my question is, if something has multiple definitions, some of which you would argue are defamatory and others are not, how does the law say we address that situation?
Okay. They have defined in their report what they meant when they said puppy mill. So we know what they meant. They said, and I quote, at puppy mills in Missouri. They didn't say some. They didn't say typically. They said at puppy mills in Missouri, dogs are crammed into small and filthy cages, denied veterinary care, exposed to extremes of heat and cold, and given no exercise or human affections. That is what they meant. That's what the reader sees when they read the whole article and put it in context. They've defined it there. And it's a transitive property. Mary Smith runs a puppy mill. So you can say, at Mary Smith's kennel in Missouri. You know, substitute the name of the plaintiff there. At Mary Smith's kennel in Missouri, dogs are crammed into small and filthy cages, denied veterinary care, exposed to extremes of heat and cold, and given no exercise or human affection. That didn't happen. It's demonstrably false. But I don't think the term is incapable of definition. I understand that people can argue about that, but let me give you an example. I think they carry this opinion and subjective interpretation argument a little bit too far. Let's look at Nazari. One of the things that in Nazari was found to be defamatory was the statement that the teacher or administrator was incompetent. Yeah, that was found sufficient, definite enough to constitute a defamatory statement. It was not a protected opinion. They rejected an argument that was protected opinion. So calling someone incompetent, you and I might disagree on whether a certain person is incompetent or not, but it implies enough facts that can be proved or disproven that is sufficient to state a cause of action for defamation. So
counsel,
I don't think there's a great deal of difference between incompetent and puppy mill, especially when puppy mills have been defined in case law as a dog breeding operation in which the health of the dogs is disregarded in order to maintain a low overhead and maximize profits. Yes, Judge, sorry.
Suppose I turn on my television and I see one candidate for public office call another candidate for the same office a con artist. Now, a con artist is somebody
just hypothetical.
Somebody that practices deception for profit, illegally. So that would seem to have an objective test to it. Do the courts of Missouri have to entertain a challenge by the second candidate as to the truth or falsity of that statement?
The well-established test in Missouri for whether something is a protected opinion or whether it's actionable is whether or not a reasonable person, not every person, but a reasonable person could, not has to, interpret the ostensible opinion as implying statements of objective fact, underlying statements of objective fact.
But has that test ever been applied in a purely political context? Not in the public forum generally, but in a contest as to whether to vote yes or no on a particular proposition or for or against a particular candidate.
I'm not sure, Judge. I can't cite you a case where it was applied.
But it, and isn't that a significantly different circumstance? You know, the in Misery, the person who was defamed may not have had any other forum to defend or prevail. But in a political environment, in core political speech, there is a forum. And if you rebut that to the extent that you get more votes than the other guy, then you prevailed as to whether you're a puppy mill or you're a con artist or you're a liar.
Let me make one point about that public forum, though. You're talking about public figures there. And there's a reason why it's harder for public figures to claim their defame. The candidate who's called a communist has to show actual malice. And there's a reason for that, because they do have this opportunity to engage in the marketplace of ideas and defend themselves. But in this case, you've got a private citizen who is in rural Missouri, minding her own business, running a kennel, and she finds herself on the national news. And that's an entirely different situation.
So you're saying there should be lesser protection when issues are before them than individual candidates for political speech?
I think that
there have been any cases drawn that distinction here or elsewhere.
I think the protection of actual malice is sufficient for both. I actually think that based on the Iglesias case that I cited, that there may only need to be fault shown even when it's a public interest or political speech. I mean, that obviously is speech of public interest.
Public interest, is public interest the same as political speech?
I think political speech is certainly statements of public interest. I'm not sure everything that's right. public interest would be political speech, but everything that's political speech would be of public interest. And I think if you followed the Iglesias case, you'd say that the standards fall, but you know, we are accepting the actual malice. We've pled the actual malice standard.
Your time is gone. Can you just really
briefly
summarize the false light debate, that respond to the claim that it just restates defamation and that we don't have two different theories that cover the same facts?
And Judge, unfortunately, because of the limits of time, I don't get to go through that as much as I wanted. There's six different. If you look at page 22 of our reply brief, I tried to set out the statements. And if the court will allow me just a minute or two here, I'll try and go through as quick as I can without repeating too much. What the false light's about is plaintiff's unwanted and offensive association in the article with those who dispose of unwanted dogs by clubbing the dogs, fail to discover and dispose of animals that die, keep dogs who are very thin, with ribs prominent.
Are you alleging false and defamatory statements that you claim also are false and defamatory? And if so,
no,
is it just
and I try to set that out. They're different. They're different. This is not about the puppy mill. This is an unwanted association. I cite the case by Judge Posner saying that association of a person with activities or beliefs that are repugnant to her, and this is repugnant to Mrs. Smith, this is the stuff that she was associated with here, is a common way of casting somebody in a false light.
Thank you. Before you sit down, how are your damages any different under either of these two causes of action?
Sure. The damage in the false light is the invasion of privacy. Honestly, that's what bothers her even more than the damage to her reputation. Now, they've tried to say, you changed that part, but you're still saying that she's had some damages to her business. And what that is with false light, you can plead special damages. And that's just saying she did have some special damages. But the heart of the false light claim is that invasion of her privacy. She can't walk to the – she's living a quiet life in rural Missouri, and she finds herself on the national news. And it was very, very upsetting to her, even more so than the damage to her reputation, in all honesty.
And our questions don't take your rebuttal time, so you still have.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I represent Marco Rubio. I'm sorry. The Humane Society of the United States. There's really no question that the campaign for the hearts and minds of Missouri voters on an issue that we trust only not to those yin-yangs across the street, but to us, the voters, it's that important, has to receive the highest degree of First Amendment protection. That's my brilliant thought, but more importantly, that's the thought of the United States Supreme Court. In the amicus brief filed by the Reporters Committee and the host of other media organizations who've lobbied in favor of the Humane Society's position here, they cite the McIntyre decision of the United States Supreme Court, which squarely and unequivocally holds that the same protection afforded under the First Amendment to candidate speech applies to issue-based elections.
Do you agree that the Missouri Constitution should be or has been interpreted to be consistent with the protections of the United States Constitution as it relates to speech?
I agree 100% with that, Judge Fischer. And I apologize, Judge Wilson called it, I believe, the Nesri. I thought it was the Nazari. In that case, this court expressly says the First Amendment makes opinions absolutely privileged. So I have there is no case. It's not cited in the reply brief where this Article 1, Section 8 discussion, and I assure this court there is not a single Missouri case that has ever construed Article 1, Section 8 of the Missouri Constitution as limiting the free speech of anybody in the state of Missouri. So when Marco Rubio comes here and wants to call Donald Trump a con artist, he's free to do so because we have the same protection here that we do in every other state.
Is Mrs. Smith a public figure?
No.
Or does she have to be?
She is not a public figure. But that's not relevant because the question before this court is not whether actual malice has been shown. The question before this court is whether or not the Humane Society is protected by the privilege for statements of opinion. The question before this court is, did the Humane Society make any objectively verifiable statement of fact? If the Humane Society had said that Mrs. Smith has been cited repeatedly for violations of the Animal Welfare Act, and she hadn't been, she would have a defamation claim. And we'd be talking about the Humane Society's insurance policy, as riveting as that discussion was. But that's not what the allegation is.
But does it really have to matter whether or not the Humane Society is factual or not, as long as it's not with malice, that you did not make the statements with malice?
It absolutely matters because there are elements to defamation. A false statement of fact made with the requisite degree of fault, either negligence for a public figure or malice, which causes damages and which is otherwise not privileged. We cannot conflate the malice test with the false statement of fact test. They're clearly two different elements. My motion to dismiss, based upon a failure to state a claim, was the failure to establish the element of a false statement of fact, because you can't have an opinion be false. That's the very definition of an opinion. I gave in my brief the example. I've looked at every photograph of the claimant, and she's ugly. I assume her mother doesn't think she's ugly. I assume her spouse doesn't think she's ugly. I think she's ugly. People are going to disagree upon that. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. That's what we said here. They're a puppy mill. The argument that we can't call them a puppy mill when we're referring to the Puppy Mill Cruelty Prevention Act, which defines a puppy mill as a large-gauge dog breeding operation, is astonishing to me.
They said you gave a different definition, which basically defined all puppy mills as having certain kinds of violations and certain kinds of abuse of animals, and that's what made it defamatory, because you used it in that particular sense.
We intended to say bad things about Smith's kennel. I would be a fool to say otherwise. We wanted to say this is the problems that can be solved by Proposition B, because there are kennels like Smith's kennel.
Well, and did you say every kennel, every puppy mill has identical problems? Did you say her kennel had all the problems you identified, or what was the opinion or fact, depending on the point of view that you asserted?
What we said is that we said, first of all, Missouri is the puppy mill capital of the world. That clearly, by a definition, doesn't mean that every puppy mill, every dog kennel, depending on which side of the podium you sit today, has all these problems. We point out that under the passage of Proposition B, the Puppy Mill Cruelty Prevention Act, these problems will be solved. So therefore, we're clearly not saying that every puppy mill by definition has these problems that Mrs. Smith's kennel has had for 10 years.
But in your 2010, a press release issued in 2010, you stated, quote, at puppy mills in Missouri, dogs are crammed into small, filthy cages, denied veterinary care, exposed to extreme heat and cold, and given no exercise or human affection. You didn't limit which puppy mills. You didn't say at some or at Mrs. Smith's.
Or correct.
You just said at puppy mills in Missouri.
First of all, we didn't say at all puppy mills. But more importantly, I don't want to win this case on technicalities. Every one of those things you said, Judge Russell, are quoted verbatim in the USDA and the Missouri Department of Agriculture inspection reports on the page of the Dirty Dozen for Mrs. Smith. She crams dogs in dirty kennels. She doesn't treat them well. There's dogs with bloody stools. There's dogs with infections. There's dogs that are left out in the cold at night. Every one of those things, Judge Russell, are exactly verbatim quoted in italics, in quotation marks, in the Humane Society Dirty Dozen report for Smith's kennel. So it's true. Every one of those things is true. So even though we didn't say every puppy mill has it, hers does. And she says, okay, so maybe I don't have a defamation claim. I have a false light claim. No, she doesn't. She also argues in a reply brief that the open court provision, Article 1, Section 14. Judge Steff, I think it was just last year in the Ambers Phillips Court, you said that Article 1, Section 14, quote, means simply the right to pursue in the courts causes of action the substantive law recognizes. The open court provision is not a get-out-of-jail-free card. It is not a I-win card. It is not a get-out-of-jail-free card for Monopoly as a way for her to just collect money because she's upset. False light invasion of privacy, as this court well knows, has never been recognized by this court. It was recognized by the Court of Appeals in Meyercord. And you can fit the Meyercord in the Sullivan, Nazari, Nazari, Pharaoh line very easily by pointing out in Meyercord there is no defamation claim. Because it's not bad to register a website. It's not bad to be falsely said to have military honors when you were just a grunt soldier who did nothing. But it's embarrassing. It's terribly offensive. There's one of the cases in the United States Supreme Court in which a husband of the family was killed, and this family was described as being poor and destitute, and that's not defamatory to be poor and destitute. They were embarrassed by it. Their privacy was invaded.
And they say that occurred here.
Baloney. What they say here is they lost the riches of being a puppy mill. That's their exact damage claim and defamation. Then they repeat verbatim, we lost the valuable business advantages of a puppy mill and false light. Oh, and by the way, our privacy was invaded. That was exactly the trick that was tried and rejected in Sullivan, where they tried to bootstrap an emotional distress claim into a loss of pecuniary interest claim. That's not what this case is about. That's not at all what this case is about. This case is not about the woman minor in West Virginia that this court cites to in the West Virginia case, who was supposedly a victim of hazing at a West Virginia coal mine, and she was exposed as being a victim. Well, none of those things happened to her. That wasn't newsworthy. There is nothing more newsworthy than a proposition that the voters of the state of Missouri are called upon to decide in a state where we believe in self-government. There is nothing more important than that. She voluntarily sought out a federal license to engage in a money-making activity. She voluntarily sought out a state license to engage in a money-making activity. She did so in what she knew was the puppy mill capital of the world. And she subjected herself to the publicity attendant to a spirited public debate about that topic, a topic that revolves around man's greatest friend. And it warms my heart to come into a courtroom that has old drum bronze out front. That's what this case is about, a political speech about something.
Did you make sure and pet him when you come by? So,
what I did note, Your Honor.
Those seen doing that usually get the easier questions from the bench.
It's kind of good luck rubbing the nose of
And I'm not giving away much, but Old Yeller is revered in this court.
Thank you, Your Honor. With that, I defer the remainder of my time to Mr. Wade, who I believe has some comments for Missourians for protection of the dogs.
May it please the court. I represent Missourians for Protection of Dogs, and we certainly join in the Humane Society's position that the alleged defamatory statements were in our opinion and are not actionable in this case, and certainly they were made in a political context, which are afforded the highest protection by this court. Briefly, on the Missourians' point, I think the Southern District Court of Appeals kicked the can down the road a little bit with respect to our motion to dismiss, which joined in all of those things that Mr. Griffin talked about. But we also raised a separate issue, and that is that the defamatory statements alleged were not published by Missourians for Protection of Dogs. If you look at the legal file quickly, you'll see that both of our motions to dismiss were filed at or near the same time. In response to those motions, Mr. Gaunt filed a combined suggestions in opposition to all the issues raised by the motions to dismiss, including mine. So all the issues were before the trial court when it made its decision in dismissing the fourth amended petition. I think that's important because on a motion to dismiss standard, the court views the adequacy of the pleading on its face. And that includes the exhibits that were attached to the petition. So the petition clearly shows the court that the allegedly defamatory statements were not published by the Missourians for Protection of Dogs. You can see that the logo of the Humane Society is at the top. You can also see that the researchers at the Humane Society have thoroughly researched the USDA reports, and they have compiled these things that they've talked about in their reports. In the briefing, Mr. Gaunt suggested that, well, there are some comments made about Missourians for Protection of Dogs paying for these reports or supporting these positions of the Humane Society. And there's really no question that they supported the Humane Society in their efforts, but they were, these reports that were issued were made in political context and made to support Proposition B. And so it doesn't suggest, the comments don't suggest that the Missourians for Protection of Dogs authored those comments. It suggests that they were presenting those as a political action committee, which they were. And that doesn't mean that they published the comments, which is a required element of the plaintiff's claim. So Mr. Gaunt, and in his fourth amended petition, does say that the Missourians for Protection of Dogs acted in concert with the Humane Society when these positions were published. However, the court is free to disregard what I think we view as conclusions in his petition. They don't state a statement of fact. Those are conclusions. And there's no fact in the petition that supports that position. And I briefly on a couple of topics that Mr. Gaunt and Mr. Griffin spoke about, it's clear that the statements made in the reports are opinions, and they were made before and after, there were specific cites to the USDA reports about the particular kennels that were identified in the reports. So the only way you can read that in context is to view the Humane Society researcher report as making an opinion about what those USDA reports said. And if you'll note from the petition, the fourth or the first petition that was filed, there's no question that they don't question the validity of the reports. If they did, we'd be talking about a whole different set of issues, like whether there's an immunity for restating the USDA report in an opinion. That's not the issue. The issue is only the argument that this opinion of the Humane Society states a false, untrue statement. That is not actionable in Missouri under the state constitution or the U.S. Constitution. And with respect to the false light invasion of privacy claim, those cases, although I'm not as well versed as Mr. Griffin is, she is not the plaintiff is not being placed out of context by being associated with the other kennels. She was identified as one of the kennels. So it's classic Mazzeri and classic defamation, and that count should not stand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please, the court. I'd like to continue discussing some of these false light allegations, especially because it ties into what I believe is a misstatement by Mr. Rhodes, that everything that they claimed about kennels is shown in Smith's inspection reports. One of the things we claim is false light is the selective editing of the reports quoted and pulling them out of context to make them sound more significant and ominous than they actually were. And when you go to the section on the Smith kennels, it's entitled A Decade of Problems. And what's interesting about that is they include only reports from April 2008 to June 2010, just barely over 2 years, as support for this decade of problems. And they're all USDA reports. None of the Missouri Department of Agriculture inspections are included. And they're all from one inspector who had a personality conflict with Mrs. Smith. That creates a false impression. We are not saying that the words they quoted didn't appear in the report, but everything beyond that we are challenging as false. And when you go to those reports, you don't see anything about lack of exercise. You don't see anything about lack of human affection. Some of these other things that they say happened at puppy mills in Missouri. In fact, in those inspection reports, there's nothing about being crammed into wire cages. In fact, Smith Kennels, which their inspector never got a photograph of the kennel. They never even saw the kennel, and they're making these claims about it. But we're starting to argue that it illustrates one of the problems with this case at this stage. This is a motion to dismiss. And you have to accept the allegations.
What facts are alleged to support your conclusion that Missourians for Protection of Dogs acted in concert with the Humane Society?
Yeah. Judge, I'm happy to talk about that. There's a lengthy response to that in the brief, the reply brief at page 28. First of all, the court said it was taking up the motion of defendant, the Humane Society of the United States, to dismiss. That's what they ruled on. It never considered the other one. But going beyond that, we did allege they were acting in concert, but the attached documents back that up. Here's some of the examples, starting at page 29. The Dirty Dozen report states that it was paid for by Missourians for the Protection of Dogs. Yes, on Prop B, Judy Pell Treasurer. Now, keep in mind that the test isn't who said it. The test is whether it was delivered by the defendant or caused to be delivered. The libelous material was caused to be delivered by the defendant. So they're paying for it. The summary report contains that identical assertion that it was paid for by Missourians for the Protection of Dogs. HSUS's chairman, a dozen more reasons, that was paid for by Missourians for Protection of Dogs. The press release from Missouri, there was a press release from Missourians for the Protection of Dogs indicating that their involvement extended beyond just paying for the publication.
It's your position.
Missourians for the Protection of Dogs itself, and I'm quoting, the
legal process. Were those documents attached to your petition?
Yes, Judge, they were. Okay. In fact, this press release is at Legal File 67. MPD itself announced the release of Missouri's Dirty Dozen and included quotes cited in the petition by the NPD campaign manager, Barbara Schmitz. And there's an email that's attached that shows that the announcement, NPD's announcement, was coordinated with HSUS. And I'm coming through this pretty fast because I want to make sure I cover everything, but that's just not accurate, that there's no evidence to show that they were instrumental in causing to be delivering or causing to be delivered the libelous material. They were involved, and the circuit court never got a chance to rule on that anyway, because it was mooted by granting the other motion. Going back to the...
I'm sorry, your time is up.
Oh.
So, case will be submitted. Thank you, gentlemen, for a well-argued case.